Dhruva Maharaj has been insulted by his mother, stepmother, and he's gone to the forest under the instruction of Suniti, his actual mother, to find God. And there, before he found God, he found the devotee of God, Narada Muni, who instructed him on the practice of mystic yoga, to meditate fully upon the Lord. And Dhruva Maharaj, following all the instructions of Narada, including chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, meditating upon the Lord through the Astanga Yoga process, making a deity of the Lord, eating the prasad, or eating very simply also. And Dhruva Maharaj, by virtue of his extremely powerful practices, his sadhana, his austerities in performing that sadhana, he focused his mind so fully upon the Lord that he gained so much power that the universe became in trouble, the entirety of the universe, due to his focusing, his meditation upon the Lord. This was a result. So the Lord came to him to get him to stop and offer him the benedictions of his heart's desires. So when Dhruva Maharaj actually saw the Lord, he was very upset. One would think that he would have been very happy, in the sense that he was praying to have the greatest of all possible kingdoms, and the Lord had come to give him his that very thing he was praying for, and performing so many austerities to get. But yet Dhruva Maharaj explained that now, having seen you, I realize how foolish I was to desire something of this material world, because the Lord himself is composed of something other than matter. So what is he composed of? It's something other than matter. So sometimes the Lord's qualities are described like that. He is nirgun, nirup. He has no qualities. He has no form, because his qualities and form have nothing to do with matter. And if we use our material conceptual ability to understand him, we will not actually understand him at all. Yet he does have qualities, and he does have form. But with our minds as they are now, we can't understand actually what those are. We can say that if we can imagine the beauty of this material world, if we multiply that times a billion, that will equal what is the most beautiful thing in this world, and multiply that by a billion, and that will equal the beauty of Krishna, or the attractiveness of Krishna. So in that way, that's called Chandra Shakanyaya, that we say that, oh, where's the moon? It's just, if you look at that branch of the tree and look a little above the branch, you'll see the moon. The moon is by the branch of the tree. But actually the moon is obviously so far from the branch of the tree. But yet, to give us a direction to look in, this is how we describe it. So similarly, although the Lord is not a billion times more beautiful than anything of the world, to give us an idea, sometimes we can say that, like that, but actually he's composed of a completely different quality. And when the soul, ourselves, are pure, then we can perceive that quality of the Lord. And it is obviously the most wonderful thing. It is spiritual, and nothing in this world can compare with it, really, to say it is like this, it is like that, it is like that. We say that Krishna's complexion is shama, or like a cloud. But actually, Krishna's complexion isn't at all like a cloud of this world. It is fully effulgent, transcendental. So Dhruva, having compared his desire and actually having seen the Lord, he felt so horrible that, first of all, he had asked for something of the material world, and the example was, he's got, like a poor man goes to the emperor of the world and the and what does he ask for? A few, some rice, you know, enough, a palm full of rice, because he's poor. But no, he could have had, if the emperor would have given him whatever he wanted, he could have asked for anything. He could have asked for so much that he would never have to think about wealth for as long as he lived, but instead he asked for some rice. So similarly, Dhruva Maharaj felt himself so foolish to have asked for that. When the devotional service of the Lord in and of itself is all that can is that which satisfies the soul, and nothing of the material world does. And in the material world, one is stuck ultimately with death. And one who is stuck with death is stuck also with birth. So Dhruva didn't even ask to get out of this crushing cycle of birth and death and disease in between, followed by old age. So he felt very foolish. But yet he very sweetly said to the Lord that I'm depending upon you, just like a child, like a baby calf depends on the mother calf for his nourishment. So similarly, even though I have desired these things, please don't let my desires stop you from giving me what I really need. So the Lord said, after he heard Dhruva Maharaj's prayers, he said to Dhruva Maharaj what he was going to give him. He would give him an eternal planet, which would be the greatest of all kingdoms. He would give him rulership over this earth for 36,000 years without ever becoming old. And he would give him full strength and full happiness during that time. And then the Lord left. And then at the end he would think about him, the Lord. Dhruva would think about the Lord and Saritad Bhavabharata, he would go there. And then the Lord left, and Dhruva Maharaj lamented again that he had asked something petty, a kingdom which vanishes in time so quickly. He had asked that of the Lord. So Dhruva lamented and he started home. So at that time, when Dhruva Maharaj was heading home, Narada Muni had previously told Dhruva Maharaj's father, what was the name of Dhruva Maharaj's father? Uttanapad. Narada Muni had previously told Uttanapad that your son, don't worry about him. He's doing something so wonderful by his practice of austerities. So then a messenger came to Uttanapad as Dhruva started heading home. And that's text 37 and 38. And what we'll try to do in this class is finish this chapter. And there's not much philosophy in the chapter, but there's some interesting points, and Prabhupada's purports tend to be short in the remainder of the chapter. And we'll read parts or some of them. The main thrust of the chapter, in some senses, has already been completed. And now Dhruva Maharaj, after seeing the Lord, he's returning home. When King Uttanapad heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back to life after death, he could not put his faith in this message. It was brought by the messenger. For he was doubtful of how it could happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. Sometimes we act improperly, and we're aware and lamenting about our horrible activity, then something good happens to us and we feel we don't deserve it. So it was due to the hardness of Uttanapad and his attachment to Saruchi, his first wife, that Dhruva Maharaj left and went to the forest in the first place. So Uttanapad felt quite guilty about that. He felt very bad. And therefore, when he heard and he thought that Dhruva Maharaj was certainly going to die out in the forest after all, a five-year-old boy out in the forest alone, and the forest is, it's not filled with emus and stuff like that, but tigers and pythons and elephants, and this is very dangerous creatures. So So he thought, Uttanabhadra thought he would certainly be dead. Who's going to cook for him? How will he eat even? So he thought, due to me, this boy has died, and now he's coming back, I don't deserve it. Although he could not believe the words of the messenger, he had full faith in the word of the great sage Narad. Thus he was greatly overwhelmed by the news that Yuva Maharaj was coming back, and he immediately offered the messenger a highly valuable necklace in great satisfaction. So when the messenger comes with good news, he gets a necklace, but when he comes with bad news, sometimes it's been known to happen, not with King Uttanabhadra. Here's Prabhupada's purport to text 37. Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, went to the forest for penance and austerity. And the king could not at all believe that a small boy of such a tender age could live, could survive in the forest. He was certain that Dhruva was dead. He therefore could not fix his faith in the message that Dhruva Maharaj was coming back home again. For him, this message said that a dead man was coming back home, and he could not believe it. After Dhruva Maharaj's departure from home, King Uttanapad thought that he was the cause of Dhruva's leaving, and thus he considered himself the most wretched. Therefore, even though it was possible that his lost son was coming back from the kingdom of death, he thought that since he was most sinful, it was not possible for him to be so fortunate as to get back his lost son. So that was Uttanapad's mood. But he knew, due to Narada's words, that he was truly coming. So therefore, being very eager to see the face of his lost son, Uttanapad mounted a chariot drawn by excellent horses and bedecked with gold and filigree, taking with him many learned brahmanas, all the elderly personalities of his family, his officers, his ministers, and his immediate friends. He immediately left the city. As he proceeded in this parade, there were auspicious sounds of conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and the chanting of Vedic mantras to indicate all good fortune. So in this, the remainder of the chapter, amongst there are some very wonderful points, but also we're going to see the opulence of the king and the auspiciousness of the king, because Dhruva Maharaj is going to inherit this. And he's going to live as the ruler of this world with this kind of opulence for 36,000 years and rule. So this was part of the Lord's benediction to him. So so one of the things that we're supposed to learn from this chapter is that we tend to not to want to take shelter of Krishna, for many reasons. And one of the reasons could be that if I take shelter of Krishna, he'll take everything away. I want something. I wish I was more pure than I am. But I want something, have a desire to fulfill. But Dhruva Maharaj is a great example of someone who had a desire to fulfill. And he took shelter of the Lord. And see how he was rewarded. He didn't lose his desire, but he gained that desire in such a wonderful way that he could not have imagined that it would be fulfilled. And he got the spiritual, he got Krishna's mercy as well. So that fear should be erased. That, oh, if I take shelter of Krishna, I won't get what I want. And then, therefore, I don't want to take shelter of Krishna. Kama sab kama va moksha kama daraditi vrena bhakti yogini adeta purushapara. But it's true that like if we are wishing for $100 and we get $1,000,000, our desire for $100 will vanish because of the satisfaction that's come from the greater wealth. Our consciousness will be uplifted. So that Dhruva Maharaj got. He was asking for jewels in the glass, even though it glittered in the form of a kingdom, but he got the most valuable jewel of his relationship with Krishna awakened. And that made him see everything in perspective. So Uttanapad was coming. Both the queens of King Uttanapad, namely Suniti and Suruchi, along with the other son, Uttam, appeared in the procession. The queens were seated on a palanquin. Now, Prabhupada explains in his purport that Suniti, the real mother of Sri Maharaj, was such a good devotee that even though Suruchi was the cause of so much trouble for her and so much insult, still Suniti was such a good devotee, she did not keep any enmity in her heart, and she was compassionate, so therefore she took Suruchi with her to see Dhruva. When the whole procession was going, we can imagine how Suruchi was feeling. Upon seeing Dhruva Maharaj, we can imagine how Uttanapad was feeling. He was so, is it real? Am I really going to see my boy again? We can imagine how Suruchi was feeling, the stepmother. She was probably feeling so embarrassed, and she'd be so relieved to see him, the boy, because she was thinking she was the cause of the boy's death. And we can imagine how Suniti was feeling with such motherly love. Oh, she was so proud of her boy who had gained so much and so happy and loving to see him again. Upon seeing Dhruva Maharaj approaching the neighboring small forest, King Uttanapad with great haste got down from his chariot. He had been very anxious for a long time to see his son Dhruva, and therefore with great love and affection he went forward to embrace his long-lost boy. Breathing very heavily, the king embraced him with both arms, but Dhruva Maharaj was not the same as before. He was completely sanctified by spiritual advancement due to having been touched by the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he was his son, but yet he was different because he was so much purified. He was so transcendental now. Reunion with Dhruva Maharaj fulfilled King Uttanapad's long-cherished desire, and for this reason he smelled Dhruva Maharaj's head again and again and bathed him with torrents of very cold tears. Cold tears come from satisfaction, hot tears come from anger and great upsetness of the mind. Then Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of all nobles. Does anyone have a dictionary handy? Or pocket dictionary, pocketly, instead of handy? No. Why don't you get it? And look up the word noble. Okay? Huh?
Fenugreek?
Filigree. Filigree is the different ornamentation. Did you, what's an example of filigree? There's none around. But you ever see golden swirls and carvings and things on that's what the filigree is. Yes?
Filigree is designs made of very fine, thin, like not exactly wire, but if you take wire and make a very small design from it. So it's not just one solid piece, but it's
ornamental.
Very delicate. Yeah. Delicate.
Made out of gold.
Some gold.
So then Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of all nobles, first of all offered his obeisances at the feet of his father and was honored by his father with various questions. He then bowed his head at the feet of his two mothers. Purport. It may be questioned why Dhruva Maharaj offered his respect not only to his mother but also to his stepmother, due to whose insult he had to leave home. The answer is that, and he was thinking in a revengeful way, and yet he touched her feet, so reverential and respectful. So why did Dhruva Maharaj do that? The answer is that after achieving perfection by self-realization and seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, Dhruva Maharaj was completely freed from all contamination of material desire. Feelings of insult or honor in this material world are never perceived by a devotee. Lord Chaitanya therefore says that one has to be humbler than the grass, and he recommended more tolerant than the tree to execute devotional service. So whatever happens to one, if one is an exalted devotee, one sees as Krishna doing this to him. So, and therefore, he never, if someone insults him, he sees Krishna is doing this for my purification. So he doesn't feel the insult directly. He sees Krishna's touch, the touch of Krishna's hand there. So a devotee who is tolerant and humble by nature sees that he deserves any difficulty that has come to him. And therefore, every difficulty that comes to him, or every good thing that comes to him, he thinks he doesn't deserve, and that's Krishna's mercy, like Uttanapada was thinking, I don't deserve this. And therefore, such a person, everything brings him closer to Krishna. And for a non-devotee, everything, whether it's seemingly externally good or bad, brings him further away from Krishna. But for a devotee, everything brings him closer to Krishna. This is real devotee. Dhruva Maharaj, therefore, has in this verse been described as Sajjanagrani, Agrani, the foremost of noble men. The pure devotee is the noblest of all. And now we will hear the dictionary definition of noble. So Dhruva Maharaj was the most noble of men, and a pure devotee is the foremost of noble men. He's the noblest of all.
Noble. Adjective. Illustrious by rank, title, or birth, belonging to the nobility.
Okay. Okay, we'll stop there for a second. So, nobility, what does that mean? It means...
Status.
What?
Status.
Excuse me?
Status.
It's a status, but having to do with royalty and connected to... But why were they called noble? Because noblemen, because they had noble qualities. They were expected to have noble qualities. Now, soon, we'll hear what is true nobility, the qualities.
The rest of the definition is that lofty character or ideals.
Lofty character and ideals. What is... Okay, go ahead.
Showing greatness of character.
Greatness of character.
Magnanimous.
Magnanimous, generous. Generous of spirit.
Morally elevated.
Morally elevated.
Splendid.
Magnificent. Yes.
Stately.
Imposing.
Impressive.
In appearance. Impressive in appearance.
Yeah.
Excellent,
admirable. Then it talks about different things like gas and noble gas and things that aren't related.
Okay. Yeah. So especially he was exalted in character. That means great integrity. He did the right thing at all times, not because there's two ways we can do the right thing. One is because it's the right thing, we want to do the right thing, even though we may not feel like doing it, that's also integrity. Or the other way is we have a strong tendency to do the right thing. So whether we naturally tend to do the right thing or naturally tend to do the wrong thing, we should do the right thing, and that's called character and integrity. Why does, when someone does the right thing, why do they do it if they're dutiful?
Strength of character.
Yeah. But what is it that makes someone do the right thing?
They care for others.
Yeah?
Fear of God.
Yeah.
Fear.
Huh? You get a good feeling when you do the right thing. That's a reward in of itself too. So for all these reasons, people do the right thing. Character. But even when it's painful to do the right thing, is correct. It's born of goodness, nobility. So the pure devotee, why Dhruva Maharaj has been described as Sajjana Grani, Sajjana Grani, the foremost of noble men. Sajjana means foremost. The pure devotee is the noblest of all, and he has no feelings of animosity towards anyone. So that's character, because he's so fixed in his seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. So he can't have animosity to anyone. Duality, due to animosity, is a creation of the material world. There is no such thing in the spiritual world, which is the absolute reality. So this was describing Dhruva Maharaj's nobility and his lack of animosity. Why it was in reference to Saruchi, how he was treating his stepmother. Saruchi, the younger mother of Dhruva Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, so he was so humble, and she must have felt touched, understanding the nobility of character of this boy. She immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands, and with tears of feeling, she blessed him with the words, "My dear boy, long may you live." Unto one who has transcendental qualities due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities offer honor, just as water automatically flows down by nature. What did that verse say? To whom? To one who has transcendental qualities. How does he get those transcendental qualities? Due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Friendliness, affectionate behavior to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To such a person he gets transcendental qualities, and all living entities offer him honor because of his qualities. And an example, just as water automatically flows down by nature. So people naturally honor a devotee due to his qualities. Prabhupada's purport. The question may be raised in this connection, why Saruchi, who was not at all favorably disposed towards Dhruva, blessed him, saying, "Long may you live," which means that she also desired good fortune for him. The answer is given in this verse. Since Dhruva Maharaj was blessed by the Lord, due to his transcendental qualities, everyone was bound to offer him all respect and benediction, just as water by its nature flows downward. A devotee of the Lord does not demand respect from anyone, but wherever he goes, he is honored by everyone throughout the whole world with all respect. Srinivasacharya said that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are respected throughout the entire world because a devotee, having pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all emanations, automatically pleases everyone, and thus everyone offers him respect. Dira dira jana priya priya karone matsaro pujito. In that verse of the six Goswamis, it takes it a teeny bit further and describes why is a devotee dear to everyone? Why does everyone treat him so nicely? Whether they are nice or whether they are not nice, they will treat a devotee nicely. And why is that? Because niyamatsaro pujito, they are worshipable. Devotee is worshipable because he's free from envy. And people perceive that. And therefore they like him naturally. The two brothers, so first Uttanapad, then Saruchi's son Uttam. The two brothers, Uttam and Dhruva Maharaj, also exchanged their tears. They were overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love and affection. When they embraced one another, the hair on their bodies stood up. Suniti, the real mother of Dhruva Maharaj, embraced the tender body of her son, who was dearer to her than her own life, and thus forgot all material grief, for she was very pleased. My dear Vidura, Suniti was the mother of a great hero. Her tears, together with the milk flowing from her breasts, wet the whole body of Dhruva Maharaj. That was a great auspicious sign. Purport. When deities are installed, they are washed with milk, yogurt, and water, and this ceremony is called Abhishek. In this verse, it has been especially mentioned that the tears which flowed down from the eyes of Suniti were all auspicious. This auspiciousness of the Abhishek ceremony performed by his beloved mother, she bathed him with her tears and the milk from her breast, like bathing a deity. This indicated that in the very near future, Dhruva Maharaj would be installed on the throne of his father. The history of Dhruva Maharaj leaving home was that his father refused to give him a place on his lap, and Dhruva Maharaj determined that unless he got the throne of his father, he would not come back. Now, this Abhishek ceremony performed by his beloved mother was an indication that he would occupy the throne of Maharaj Uttanapad. 51. The residents of the palace, they were also there. So everyone came out, practically the whole city came out to meet Dhruva Maharaj. The residents of the palace praised the queen. So they praised, by praising Suniti, they were indirectly praising Dhruva Maharaj too. They said, "Dear queen, your beloved son was lost a long time ago, and it is your great fortune that he has now come back. It appears, therefore, that your son will be able to protect you for a very long time, and he will put an end to all your material pangs. Dear queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead who delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him, the Lord, surpass the course of birth and death. This perfection is very difficult to achieve." So they recognized her devotion to Krishna. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj was the lost child of Queen Suniti. But during his absence, she always meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was able to rescue his devotee from all danger. While Dhruva Maharaj was absent from his home, not only did he undergo severe austerities in the forest of Maruvan, but at home also his mother also prayed to the Supreme Lord for his safety and good fortune. In other words, the Lord was worshipped by both the mother and the son, and both were able to achieve the supreme benediction from the Supreme Lord. The sage Maitreya continued, because Maitreya Muni is narrating this to Vidura. He said, Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, when everyone was thus praising Dhruva Maharaj, the king was very happy, and he had Dhruva and his brother seated on the back of a she-elephant. Thus, he returned to his capital, where he was praised by all classes of men. The whole city was decorated with columns of banana trees containing bunches of fruits and flowers, and betel nut trees with leaves and branches were seen here and there. There were also many gates set up which were structured to give the appearance of sharks. At each and every gate there were burning lamps and big water pots decorated with differently colored cloth, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and hanging mango leaves. In the capital city there were many palaces. So how opulent and beautiful and auspicious this place was. There were many palaces, city gates, and surrounding walls, which were already very beautiful. And on this occasion, all of them were decorated with golden ornaments. The domes of the city palaces glittered, as did the domes of the beautiful aeroplanes which hovered over the city. So the fact that there were aeroplanes around meant that the demigods were also there to see Dhruva Maharaj. All the quadrangles, the lanes and streets in the city, and the raised sitting places at the crossings were thoroughly cleansed and sprinkled with sandalwood water and auspicious grains such as rice and barley and flowers, fruits, and many other auspicious presentations were scattered all over the city. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road, from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him. And out of maternal affection, they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seeds, barley, curd, water, newly grown grass, fruits, and flowers. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing song sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him, and he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. The bedding in the palace was as white as the foam of milk, and it was very soft. The bedsteads were made of ivory with embellishments of gold, probably like filigrees. And the chairs, benches, and other sitting places and furniture were made of gold. Gold has a particular vibration that it brings happiness on the material level, and also it brings a desire for more gold. That's what happens. And jewels and everything. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble, with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jeweled lamps in their hands. Engravings. This was in Satyayuga when there was so much opulence. There's an interesting purport here by Prabhupada. We'll read from about the middle. It can be calculated that Dhruva Maharaj lived many millions of years ago. But the description of the palace of Dhruva's father is so glorious that we cannot accept that advanced civilization did not exist even 40 or 50,000 years ago. There were walls like those in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapad even very recently, during the Mughal period. Anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls were made of marble and were once decorated with jewels. Raise your hand if you've seen the Red Fort in Delhi. It's shocking when you see how the kings lived even a few hundred years ago. And the walls, they had jewels all over them. And now you can see where they've all been pried out. And there's some semi-precious stones still there. But the walls were covered in jewels, valuable jewels. And then you get an idea of what opulence actually was. Everything is marble. And they're like waterfall. They have it set up such an ingenious way where the water would flow and there would be a summer place, a place where the king would sit in the summer, where it was cooler, and water would flow nearby, so that would cool things down still further. It says that anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls were made of marble and were once decorated with jewels. During the British period, all these jewels were taken away and dispatched to the British Museum. That's actually what happened. That's why the British loved India so much as their colony, because it took so many jewels from the deities, and put them in the crown jewels. That's where they came from. The conception of worldly opulence was formerly based mainly on natural resources such as jewels, marble, silk, ivory, gold, and silver, because these things bring material happiness to someone. The advancement of economic development was not based on big motor cars. Advancement of human civilization depends not on industrial enterprises, but on possessions of natural wealth and natural food, which is all supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we may save time for self-realization and success in the human form of body. So more about the opulences and beauties of this place. The king's residence was surrounded by gardens wherein there were varieties of trees brought from the heavenly planets. In those trees there were pairs of sweetly singing birds and almost mad bumblebees, which made a very relishable buzzing sound. There were emerald staircases which led to lakes full of variously colored lotus flowers and lilies and swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and similar other valuable birds were visible in those lakes. So very different from today's cities. The saintly King Uttanapad, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj, and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, he felt very satisfied, for Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. Purport. When Dhruva Maharaj was in the forest executing his austerities, his father, Uttanapad, heard everything about his very wonderful activities. Although Dhruva Maharaj was the son of a king and was only 5 years old, he went to the forest and executed a devotional service under strict austerities. Therefore, his acts were all wonderful. And when he came back home, naturally, because of his spiritual qualifications, he became very popular amongst the citizens. He must have performed many wonderful activities by the grace of the Lord. No one is more satisfied than the father of a person who is credited with glorious activities. Maharaj Uttanapad was not an ordinary king. He was a Rajarshi, a saintly king. Formerly, this earth was ruled by one saintly king only. Kings were trained to become saintly, therefore they had no other concern than the welfare of their citizens. These saintly kings were properly trained, and as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita also, the science of God, or the yoga system of devotional service known as Bhagavad Gita, was spoken to the saintly king of the sun planet, and gradually descended to the Kshatriya kings who were generated from the sun and the moon. If the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly, and they are very happy because their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. So there's two more verses, and we'll read the verses and the purports to end this chapter. They're not long. When, after concentration, after due deliberation, King Uttanapad saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. After considering his own advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapad detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. So read those two purports and then we'll end. Although it is misconceived that formerly the monarchical government was autocratic, from the description of this verse it appears that not only was King Uttanapad a Rajarshi, but before installing his beloved son Dhruva on the throne of the empire of the world, he consulted his ministerial officers, considered the opinion of the public, and also personally examined Dhruva's character. Then the king installed him on the throne to take charge of the affairs of the world. When a Vaishnava king like Dhruva Maharaj is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy that it is not possible to imagine or describe. Even now, if people all would become Krishna conscious, the democratic government of the present day would be exactly like the kingdom of heaven. If all the people became Krishna conscious, they would vote for persons of the category of Dhruva Maharaj. If the post of chief executive were occupied by such a Vaishnava, all the problems of satanic government would be solved. The youthful generation of the present day is very enthusiastic in trying to overthrow the government in different parts of the world. But unless people are Krishna conscious like Dhruva Maharaj, there will be no appreciable change in government, because people who hanker to attain political position by hook or by crook cannot think of the welfare of the people. They are only busy to keep their position of prestige and monetary gain. They have very little time to think of the welfare of the citizens. And then the final purport, that purport was in relationship to the verse of Uttanapad placing Dhruva Maharaj on the throne, and the next is what happened to Uttanapad after he placed Dhruva on the throne. Where did he go? Huh? He went to the forest, retired to perform austerity. From living in the opulence, he began to prepare for death. by living in, getting detached from comforts of life and developing his attachment to Krishna. So in relationship to that, Prabhupada says, this is the sign of a Rajarshi. King Uttanapad was very opulent and was emperor of the world. And these attachments were certainly very great. Modern politicians are not as great as kings like Maharaj Uttanapad. But because they get some political power for some days, they become so much attached to their position that they never retire unless they are removed from their post by cruel death or killed by some opposing political party. It is within our experience that the politicians in India do not quit their positions until death. This was not the practice in olden days, as is evident from the behavior of King Uttanapad. Immediately after installing his worthy son, Dhruva Maharaj, on the throne, he left his home and palace. There are hundreds and thousands of instances like this in which kings in their mature age would give up their kingdom and go to the forest to practice austerities. Practice of austerity is the main business of human life. What does austerity mean?
Hardship.
Yeah. Yes, that's half of it.
Voluntarily accepting a discomfortable situation.
Yeah. But for what purpose?
For the purpose of spiritual life.
Yeah, that's what we mean. Human life is meant for austerity, for the purpose of divine austerity. That means giving up that which is temporarily pleasing, and in that sense hardship, for the purpose of gaining Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam, purifying the heart. Shudyed Brahma Sokyam, Shudyed, purifying the heart, and then getting happiness but on a different level. Tvanantam, Brahma Sokyam, the greatest happiness that's unending. What does the dictionary say about austerity? Does it include the word?
It's not even in here.
Oh, you're kidding. I was only joking.
It is austere.
Yeah.
It means to be harsh or austere. That's it. Morally strict.
Bah.
Severely simple. that's all the definition of meaning.
Yeah. Make it sound as unattractive as possible. Tapo divyam bhutakayena sattvam.
Auspicious in
you. Yeah. Maybe we should read the dictionary instead of the Bhagavatam. Sounds great. No, I know it's... No, actually, I'm sure if our consciousness is right, we can... Every word will have a philosophical import. Yeah?
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, some of them would. If not everyone. But we could say, oh, see how much nonsense is in there for a lot of them. Why don't you just try one? Pick one word. Any word, just at random. Open it up and put your finger there. Not on the same page. Yes. It would be really exciting today. What word is it?
Non-resident.
Yes. We are non-residents of the material world. We're just visiting. We are aliens, actually. Strange visitors from another planet, the spiritual world. See? No, I know what it means, a non-resident. Okay, let's finish the purport and then we can play with one more, okay? As Dhruva, practice of austerity is the main business of human life. As Maharaj Dhruva practiced austerity in his early age, his father, Maharaj Uttanapad, in his old age, also practiced austerity in the forest. In modern days, however, it is not possible to give up one's home and go to the forest to practice austerity. But if people of all ages would take shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement and practice the simple austerities of illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating, and chant the Hare Krishna mantra regularly, 16 rounds, by this practical method, it would be a very easy task to get salvation from this material world. So that is the austerities that we are recommended to practice, the basic austerity. Okay. that reminded me of Prabhupada telling the story of about when one of his godbrothers was preaching in Europe in the, I don't know what year, in the 1930s or so. And there was one British lord who had previously been in India. He had served as a governor of maybe Bengal or something. And he asked Prabhupada's godbrother if he could make him into a brahmana. And Lord so-and-so asked, could you make me into a brahmana? And he said, yes, I can make you into a brahmana. How? All you have to do is like practice the simple austerities of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. And then you can become a brahmana. And the reply of Lord such and such was, impossible. So what is impossible becomes possible by the mercy of chanting Hare Krishna. Okay, one more. Go ahead. But I'm not going to answer this one. We're going to call out, we'll ask for other people to give us the philosophical, Krishna conscious philosophical purport. Okay, which one?
It's not very good.
Well, say it.
Raffinate.
It isn't very, I don't know whether it's good or bad. What does it mean? What is
it?
Yeah, what is to raffinate?
Product of an extraction of liquid with solvent.
We have nothing to do with raffinates. This is just one. A raffinate has something to do with what? There's bhumira po, nalo vayu kamano buddhe, which is just some material ingredients. But Krishna says, Paryayam idastvanam prakritim bidime param jiva bhutta mahabaho. So everything that we see in existence is a combination, I'm trying to talk myself out of this one here, of these type of things plus the spirit soul. Okay, we'll stop here. Escape while we're ahead. Any, were there any questions? Thank you very much. Any comments? Yeah.
One paper they mentioned that King Prithanapath had heard everything about Dhritarashtra in the forest. He's one of the activities.
From Narada. Even as soon as Dhruva left, after Dhruva met Narada, Narada just went to Uttanapada immediately and told him what would happen. Even though it seems like it hadn't happened yet, but he told him that his boy will come back, he will become so great, he will have seen the Lord. And then a messenger came, and he didn't believe it, that Dhruva was actually returning, but because he remembered that Narada had told him, therefore he had faith. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
You mentioned how, also says in the purport that the devotee doesn't see an insult as directly as to him, he says it's Krishna's touch.
That's what I said.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
So I don't think that's directly in there.
So we can, it's easy to understand when we've been insulted or there's a difficult position, somehow we're able to have realisation, all right, this is for my purification. It's not difficult when sometimes we get some honour or the devotee's praise you for something.
Yeah, well then you think, I don't deserve that, that's what's described.
How, in what way do you see...
That I don't deserve that, it's Krishna's help me do that. So therefore, who should get the praise? Like if there's a little 5-year-old trying to lift a big weight, and his father's helping him, and someone says to the boy, you've done very well, it's amazing how strong you are. So if the boy knows what's going on, he'll say, no, I didn't really do it, it was my father. So he said, by Krishna's grace, that this praise is coming to me. Because we should know our capacity, how dependent we are on Krishna. Any other questions? Yeah.
I kind of understand. Here it says, when Dhruva Maharaj came back, all the ladies, they showered him with all these auspicious things.
Yes.
Is that literally, they're throwing these things on him?
Like this? Yeah, of course you want to know about the yogurt.
And grass? And
yeah.
Curd?
Yeah, the curd.
Can't be served, isn't it? White mustard seeds, water. fruits.
Well, they didn't take like buckets of water. They didn't take buckets of water. You know, they sprinkle like this. Like one time, like during the holy season too, when they take little dice and they put it on you. So there's different ways you can do it. So in Bengal one time, I saw that these ladies were on Gaur Purnima, on the holy day, holy Purnima, they would take a little bit of dye and sprinkle it on you very, very nicely. But then if you go to Vrindavan, it's completely different. You know, they beat you with it or something like that, and they ruin all your clothes and they squirt it on you.
Bucket load.
Bucket load sometimes. So there's very gentle and pleasing ways to do these things. Obviously they weren't, you know, bowling fruits at Dhruva Maharaj. Yeah. No, it means something. Although we, maybe just from the verse, we can't understand exactly what it means, you know, exactly how it was done. But we should understand there are auspicious ways to do things. And they were doing it the auspicious way, and that the atmosphere was very pleasing by doing that. You know, they were probably presenting fruit to him. That's usually what's done.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jay. Srila Prabhupada ki jay. Dhruva Maharaj ki jay. Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jay.